let me elevate him only under myself. Let me put him in charge of my whole nation. And he does so. So we see, as Joseph did at that time when Pharaoh put him over all of Egypt, he certainly realized why he had had to spend all those years in prison, why he had taken him this long to be elevated to this purpose and for this reason. But even in that, Joseph knows that I've come through all this and now God has put me here. I'm a Hebrew over an Egyptian nation. I have my own home, my own servants, all of these things. But he still probably tries to realize, why me? Why do I have to be the one? Or why, you know, God has certainly turned something horrible in the sale of my body into slavery, and he's turned it around to good. But here I still am away from my homeland. Why am I here in Egypt? So this is the story we're going to continue when he's reunited with his brothers, because that's going to reveal to Joseph why he is in Egypt, why he's been elevated in Egypt. It's not just to help the Egyptians. It's not just to preserve the other nations that are going to come calling during the famine and that need corn, but there is a God reason why he is there, because Jacob, his brothers, his extended family, they are going to need substance, and they're going to need to be able to be taken care of, and someone needs to be there to take care of Israel. And so that's where Joseph finds himself. So when we pick up today's story, it's important, because if I just started out with chapter 44, we've lost part of what's happened here. We know that the famine has taken, it's starting to bite. It's in year two of the seven-year famine. And back in the land of Canaan, Jacob and his sons, he's got 11 sons now because he still believes that Joseph is dead, they're starting to go hungry because the famine has wiped out their fields and they're in need. And they get word that Egypt has prepared for this. They don't know anything about Joseph. They don't know anything about what's happened, but they get word that Egypt has prepared for this and they're selling corn. If you need corn to carry you through the famine, Egypt has it. So Jacob tells his sons, all except Benjamin, the youngest, tells those other 10 sons, go to Egypt and take this money and buy corn and bring it back to us so that we can try to sustain ourselves during this famine. Now, he keeps Benjamin because he is still reeling from the death of what he says is the proposed death of Joseph. Benjamin being the youngest, he certainly is clinging to Benjamin. If something were to tragically happen to his sons, he's still going to have Benjamin. So these 10 brothers go to Egypt, and of course, as all those who are asking for help, they go in front of Joseph. Now, if you read the story in chapters 42 and 43, they do not recognize Joseph. This is the interesting part. Now, about 22 years have passed since this young boy was sold into slavery. And now 2 years of famine and all this, a lot of times gone by. And so he's a grown man now. The Egyptians look a little different. They didn't believe in facial hair. They would shave, and a lot of the Hebrews would be fully bearded. And so they're seeing this clean-shaven man. Most of the Egyptian people who were in charge would wear a certain type of head gear that would cover most of their head. And they even, and if you look at, study Egyptians' culture, they were into makeup. Even the men would wear certain makeup around the eyes. Anyway, whatever it is, they go in front of Joseph, and my guess is they weren't within 10 feet of him. He's up on a platform, and they can't recognize who this man is. But he knows them as soon as they hit the door. As soon as they come in, he recognizes, these are my brothers that sold me into slavery years ago, and here they are, and he knows why they're there. They're going to be begging for corn. So with that, he says in his heart, he says, I'm going to see, and this is the part of the story that we have to try to understand, the symbology of our spiritual nature. He is going to see if these are the same brothers that treated him so unfairly. Have they changed, or are they the same? Do they seem to have the same cold heart? He sees the 10 of them come in. He doesn't see his brother Benjamin. They come in, and he says, he starts to play a game with them almost. He comes and he starts to claim that they are spies. Why are you here? We're here to buy corn. We have money. We come from the land of Canaan. And he goes, I perceive you to be spies. out to spy out our land and to steal and to rob us from their corn. And the brothers say, no, you got us all wrong. We're not spies. We're here because of you're offering corn for money. Joseph puts his brothers in jail for 3 days. He puts them in jail. They're sitting in jail for 3 days. They get out of jail, and Joseph greets them again and says, now, the only way you're going to prove to me that you're not spies is you've told me about your father, because Joseph asked him, and you told me that you had a younger brother. I want you to take the corn that we're going to give you, and I want you to go back to your homeland, and I want you to bring your younger brother back to me. I want to see him. I want to see if you're telling me the truth. It's a strange request. He gives them the corn that they want, but tells them they must bring back their youngest brother that they had told him about. So they tell Joseph, well, our father will not let the youngest come with us because he is so attached to the younger one because of, you know, if something were to happen to us, he's got to have his youngest son with him. And Joseph tells him, I tell you what, I'm going to take Simeon, your brother, and I'm going to lock him up. I'm going to keep him as ransom. And you're going to go back, unload your corn, and you're going to bring your brother back here to prove to me that you weren't spies to begin with. So they did that. And Joseph, just to prove, here again, playing a game with him, he tells his hired hands, they've given you money to pay for the corn. I want you to sneak in and put the money back into their satchels on their donkeys. And so that they leave, they're going to still have their money with them. I'm not taking their money. So they go back home to Jacob and tell Jacob this is what's happened and that that this man in Egypt is demanding to see Benjamin. And so when they come back, or they tell Jacob, Jacob is fighting with them. I don't want to send Benjamin, you know, because I've already lost my other youngest son. And Jacob makes a statement to the brothers. He says, you know, my wife had two sons. He's referring to Rachel. He doesn't talk about Leah or the other two handmaidens. He says, you know, my wife had two sons, and one of them is no longer with us. And Benjamin is the only one left of Rachel. There's an attraction. There's an attachment that Jacob has to Joseph and Benjamin. But they tell him, they say, well, Simeon's locked up, and we've got to take Benjamin back to get Simeon. So he relents and says, go back and take Benjamin with you. So they go back, and we're still getting ready to enter into the lesson today. They go back, and this time they go in front of Joseph, and he sees Benjamin. When he sees his brother, you have to remember the connection that Joseph has with Benjamin, because they are the sons of Rachel. They are the blood brothers fully. And when he sees Benjamin, he departs the stage and he weeps in his chamber. He comes back after wiping his eyes, getting straightened up. He comes back and he greets the men again. And this is your brother, is it? And they start saying so. And he releases Simeon. And he tells his stewards, or his hired hand, I want you to do something else. I want you to give them corn again. I want you to do the same thing. Put the money back in to the satchels. Because when they came back the second time, they said, You put our money back. Here's our money again. We're going to pay double now. Our father, he saw all the money come back. He says, you're going to pay this and pay double. So they go back to Joseph and getting ready to pay double. So Joseph tells his stewards, put the money back in their packet. And this time, I want you to take my silver cup. This silver cup is a strange cup. I mean, as I studied this, I didn't like what I was reading about, you know, these cups. But it is what it is. It's part of the culture. Back in those days, the Egyptian hierarchy or the royalty or the people that were over, they would practice what they would call divination, where they would politicize or prophesize or they would even, you know, talk about what they think is going to happen in the future. And they would usually do this while they were drinking. And their cups that they would use made out of silver, and it had all kind of Egyptian inscriptions in it, things like that. And only royalty had these cups. So Joseph tells his steward, put my cup in the bag of the youngest. Put it in the bag of Benjamin. And I want you to let them go, and then I want you to overtake them. And that's where we're going to pick up in chapter 44 so that you can read along with us, and we're going to glean from what we can in front of us this morning. And it says, and he commanded the steward of the house, saying, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put every man's money back in his sack's mouth, back in their sack. And put my cup, the silver cup, in the sack's mouth of the youngest, along with his corn money. And he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. And when they, the brothers, were gone out of the city and not yet far off, Joseph said unto his steward, get up and follow after the men, chase them down, and when thou overtake them, say unto them, wherefore have ye rewarded evil for good? What have you done? Is not this it in which my Lord drinketh, and whereby indeed he divineth? Yet ye have done evil in so doing. He's telling the steward to overtake them. I want you to tell them, I want you to stop them and say that y'all have stolen my Lord's silver cup. And he does this, and they basically deny it totally. Judah steps up and says, no, we didn't do it. None of us have done this. If you find that cup on our donkeys, we'll all become slaves to you. You know, I know my brothers, none of them would do this. So the steward goes through, and he goes through the donkeys, and he goes all the way down through the 11 brothers, and he goes down to the youngest one of Benjamin, and there's the cup. He brings the cup out, and the brothers are devastated, because to them, this meant sure death. I mean, you've just taken the highest ruling authority in Egypt, his Egyptian authority cup, and what are you going to do? So the steward says, come on back with me. And this, you know, you imagine the long trip back of saying, well, this is it, boys. They get back in front of Joseph. Joseph condemns them for stealing his cup. And Judah, the one that actually came up with the idea, you remember when the brothers were going to put Joseph in the pit? And they all voted to do this, except for Reuben. Reuben thought it was a horrible idea, but they all agreed they were going to put him in the pit. And remember, they put him in the pit, and then when he was screaming out, and they were eating their breakfast or whatever, they had a meal sitting there at the rim of the pit while he's screaming out for help, and they ignored him. Judah was the one who said, I got a great idea. Let's sell the kid. Let's don't kill him. Let's sell him. We'll make money off of this. Why should we kill him and we get nothing for it? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites passing through, and we'll at least make money off this guy. So Judah is the one who is saying that back then, years before, but now in front of Joseph, who he still doesn't recognize, he's going to offer something. The whole purpose of this conversation that Joseph is about to have with his brothers, the whole purpose for Joseph playing these seemingly tricks on his brothers was not necessarily retribution. It wasn't necessarily to get revenge on these brothers for all that they did to him. Joseph had a lot of wisdom, and the story of Joseph is one that is similar to salvation itself, in that Joseph wanted to find out the hearts of his brothers. He knew the hearts of his brothers when he was in the pit. He knew when crying out and his brothers had no compassion on him, when they would make fun of him and laugh at him, he knew how hard they were back then. But now he is wanting to see if something has changed, and it has changed. Over these 20 years, those brothers' hearts have melted because there's guilt that has driven them for these 20 years, knowing what they did to Joseph and how they lied to their father, Jacob, about his death. Judah, no doubt, is the one that is sinking into this despair of guilt, even to the point where when he is talking to Joseph and trying to give an excuse, he says, I can't explain this other than God above is punishing us for our iniquity. He admits to Joseph, who he doesn't recognize, that this is all retribution from God because of something we did years ago. Joseph hears this, and he knows what he's meaning. He knows what he's talking about. So Judah, the one who's decided to sell him, is saying, this is all, I've had this guilt for 20 years. I knew this was coming. This is God's revenge on us, and we are here. We're going to pay the price. We're going to be your slaves forever. My brothers are going to be your slaves forever, so just accept that. That's all we can do for what Benjamin has done. Joseph says, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to keep all of you guys slaves. I'm going to keep the brother. I'm going to keep Benjamin because he's the one who stole it. I'm going to keep him as my servant and my slave. And Judah speaks up again and tells him that if we go back to our father without Benjamin, our father will die. He says, I know the grief that my father has had. And he tells Joseph, because he had a wife with two sons, and one of those sons is gone, is dead. And if we don't go back with this second one, our father will die. So let me make this deal with you. If you will allow Benjamin to go back with my brothers, I, Judah, will be the sacrificial lamb. I will stay here, and I will be your personal servant for the rest of my life. Just don't take my youngest brother, Benjamin. Joseph hears this, and he knows what repentance is. He knows the hearts of his brothers have changed these 20 years. He knows that Judah, the one who said, I got a great idea to profit off, his view and his repentance is secure by saying, He loves his father and he loves his brothers enough to say, I will take the punishment. In this world where Benjamin stole Judah, he still thinks Benjamin stole it. For what Benjamin did, let me take the punishment. Let me be the lamb that lays down his life to let him go. And you can see where this is going, because out of Judah's loins will come the Messiah. True repentance for what he had done all those years ago, and now he is asking for Joseph's forgiveness and willing to pay the price. So we get into chapter 45, which is the culmination of this whole story, where I've got to read verse 1 first because it won't make sense. Verse 1 says, then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him. And he caused every man to go out from me. He cried out, everybody that's Egyptian, get out of here. I'm going to be by myself with these 11 men. And there stood no man with them while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. Now that's interesting, because at that point, his voice had not given it away. The visuals of Joseph had not given, the sight of Joseph had not given it away. He revealed himself to them when everybody was out of the room. We don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us how did he reveal himself. We know he's going to tell them, I am Joseph. But he is, furthermore, he's going to show something. We don't know if he took his headpiece off. We don't know if there was a scar that they would only know of. We don't know what it could have been, but he revealed himself to them to where they knew immediately that it was him, that this is our brother, Joseph, who we sold. And it says that in verse 4, Joseph said to his brethren, verse 3, and Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph, doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence, as we can imagine. Not only shocked that he's still living, not only stunned that he's now the ruler over Egypt, but yet fearful of what this man could do to them and may still possibly do. And then the guilt that comes up that when you're facing the one that you've rejected. The commentaries point out that this is going to be similar to how the Jewish nation will be at the second coming of Christ, the one that they've rejected and they have to behold. Because I wrote down in Zechariah, the prophet says, they will look on me whom they have pierced. Once he is revealed, those that have rejected him must look upon him and be similar to what these brothers of Joseph, stunned and shocked and disbelief and fear of what they are beholding. This would be the perfect time for Joseph to said, I got you where I want you. Now you're going to pay the price. But the character, the integrity, and the knowledge of Joseph to know that God had planned this all along or had worked this through all along for a divine purpose, revenge was no longer part of his plan, no longer desired to get back at his brothers because he now understood that through all my troubles and trials, through everything, all the years of being distanced from my father, whom I loved, my brothers, all this was, God had used it for a good purpose. So he says unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now, therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. Now Joseph knows why he's in Egypt. He knew back when Pharaoh elevated him why he had to go to prison, because he had to learn the system. He knew why he was in Potiphar, because he had to learn how to deal with people and be in charge of people. But he didn't understand why he had to stay in Egypt. But now he knows why he had to stay in Egypt, because his brothers are in need. And God has done every bit of this because God has promised our forefather Abraham that he would make a great nation, and that nation is not going to die out there in the wilderness of starvation. God has established this point for me to be where I am so that I can feed you and protect you. And from verse 6 to 11, it tells us that Pharaoh even hears about the brothers and the reunification or the reunion that they have with Joseph. Joseph's brothers from the land of Canaan have come. Pharaoh's thrilled with it. Says, give them the fat of the land. Give them everything they can and all this. And Joseph even gets to a point where he's going to tell them, I want you to go back and deliver all this to my father, but I want you to bring him with you. And you're going to stay in Egypt. I'm going to give you the best fertile land in Egypt down near the land of Goshen. And you're going to stay there and live out these 5 years. Because I, Joseph, I know that 2 years have already passed in the famine. There's five more to go and it's going to get worse. You're going to be in the best fertile land. My father and you, my brothers, and your families are going to be here with us. And we're going to protect you and sustain you through these years. And he says, and behold, your eyes see in the eyes of my brother Benjamin that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. And you shall tell my father when you go back of all my glory in Egypt. Explain to him what happened after you had sold me into slavery. This is what God has done. And of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father. Bring him with you this time. Pack it all up and bring him. And the children of Israel did so. And Joseph gave them wagons according to the commandment of Pharaoh. Pharaoh told him to give them everything. And gave them provisions for the way. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them, see that you not fall out by the wayside. Don't argue with each other. Don't try to say, well, how can we use this? I want you to go in peace and come back in peace. And they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father. So not only has the reunion gone great, not only do they realize they're not going to face revenge from their brother, but that God has used what they did for bad, and he's turned it for good. Some people would say that, well, God's in his sovereignty, he made those boys sell Joseph into slavery. Or God may have said, you know, he was okay with them killing. God doesn't use sin to bring about his will. You know, he will react upon the sinful nature of man, and when they do things that are wrong, and he may, who knows, you know, when the brothers are going to kill Joseph, and instead Judah spoke up and said, I got a great idea, let's sell him instead. Now, that could have been of God. God could have said, these guys, their sinful nature is to kill their brother. I'm not going to bless that. I'm not going to sanction that. I'm going to twist it around. I'm going to change it. Judah gets up and says, we'll make some money off of it. He winds up in Egypt where God wanted him and planned on it all along. And so we have this point where the brothers are leaving and they're talking about all this, that this was all part of God's doing. Judah, you probably spoke on behalf of God. He saved his life. God did all this. So they're going back and they enter into Jacob's tent. And they told him, they go up to Jacob and they basically say, Joseph is yet alive. And he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he did not believe them. He believed them not. For these years, all these years, he had mourned the death of Joseph. He believed them. Remember when they brought back his coat of many colors dipped in blood? He believed them when they said he died. He didn't have a hard time believing that he was dead. But now that they're coming back and saying, Joseph is alive, he doesn't believe it. It was only when, in verse 27, that they told him all the words of Joseph. I try to connect this to Jesus here. It was only when they told him all the words that Joseph spoke to them, which he had said unto them, and when Jacob, he, saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived, and Israel, they'd just been calling him Jacob, hadn't they? And Israel, verse 28 said, it is enough. I've seen enough. I've heard enough. My heart is converted. In other words, Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. That is symbolic of salvation itself. Many people believe that Jesus died. It's not a hard thing to prove to people that Jesus died. They'll accept that. It's the alive part that they won't accept. You know, when you say, but yet he lives. Oh, I don't know about that. I don't see evidence of his life. I believe he's died, but I don't believe he's alive. But it's when they hear the words that he has spoken, their hearts are melted and turned. And when they see the blessings that come with believing in Jesus' being alive, when they see the evidence in our lives and the blessings in our lives and in our spirits and in our countenance, but yet when the words they hear from Jesus, as Jacob heard the words of Joseph, and by hearing the words he believed that, yes, that is my son, I believe he's alive, so is it a sinner can hear the words of Jesus and believe that, yes, I believe he's alive, and I will follow him before I die. I will follow him and his path. We see that this is very symbolic. Joseph is playing a type of Christ. Of course, it's symbology all through this particular story of Joseph and his brothers. But we see even in Jacob the role that he played that we can point to. We know that as Jacob gets up and goes back to Egypt to have that reunion, that he can see his beloved Joseph one last time before his death. We know the joy that's in his heart. We know that even in a time of famine and despair, that God is protecting him and providing for him. And it's interesting that what's not in our lesson text is in chapter 46, the very first three verses of it, they're getting ready to go back. And here again, I thought it was interesting that the whole time they've been talking about, Jacob didn't believe. His heart was fainted. Still, you know, Jacob got his name changed by God to Israel years ago. But they every now and then, when you see the unbelief and all that, they still call him Jacob. And the very next verse, and Israel believed. He was converted. He got his new name. Once he believed that his son was alive and that God had preserved him, the Bible calls him Israel again. His heart is converted. And as we have a new name in Christ, so does he. And it says in chapter 46, verse 1, and Israel, talking about Jacob, but in his new name, and Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And this is on his way. And God spake unto Israel in a vision that night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. The point of this is that God didn't stop the famine. God used the famine in a way to get Jacob and his family out of the land of Canaan. Because remember, God had told Abraham that I'm going to make a great nation out of your seed, and that great nation is going to spend 400 years in captivity in a land that's not their own. Now, we don't know if Jacob knew that. Abraham certainly knew it, and he's long gone. But now, in a vision, God is appearing to Jacob and say, don't be afraid to go to Egypt, because this is all planned by me, and I want you there, because there, in a land that's not yours, I'm going to make you into a great nation. Commentaries will try to exercise the fact that if they would have stayed in Canaan with all the pagan other pagan tribes and civilizations around the land of Canaan, they would have intermarried. The culture and the nature and all that would have fractured, and it would have been very difficult to have a united nation like Israel, God had to get them together and preserve them in a place where they couldn't intermingle. He had to enslave them, in a sense. So he goes to Egypt, where Jacob, his sons, their families, they all stay in the land of Goshen. They have babies. They grow. And we know that in Exodus, the book of Exodus starts and tells us that there is a time when another Pharaoh comes in that doesn't know Joseph that's going to enslave them, because by then they have multiplied exponentially. They are an army of people now. But God has preserved them into one nation. They didn't intermingle with Egyptians because they were Hebrews, and Egyptians and Hebrews did not intermingle. It was a caste system. So the whole purpose of growing the nation of Israel, where the bloodline can produce the Messiah, they were going to go to Egypt and would be enslaved for 400 years. Purpose being that God got them there for a reason, and everything that happens is not necessarily, everything that happens to us is not directly brought on to us by God. There are things that happen to us that are devastating, and God had nothing to do with it. Sickness and all these disease, God does not produce that. But he can take these things and redirect them to help us in our lives. And in this case, where Joseph, who lived his whole life, the prime years of his life, thinking that my life is over, now sees the connecting dots of what God has done. And when he finally gives his father and his brothers the land of Goshen, and he sees them there, and he knows how great God is, that God allowed this to happen and worked it all through his life and used him to direct this, it's not only something that would preserve Joseph's knowledge of God forever, and he would tell his sons about it, but it's for us, the beneficiaries of reading the book of Genesis, that we know that God is always directing whatever, or reacting to whatever is taking place, to his good. His will happen, and we are wanting to be in his will. That is our goal, to always be within his will and allow him to direct our paths. Next week, we're going to get into the final story of the patriarchs. We're going to actually talk about the death of Joseph and Jacob and how they die well. And this will put an end to the discussion on the patriarchs with the death of Joseph. So we hope to see you then. Hope you have a good week.